Go In and Sink, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Author's note. The Allied invasion of Sicily in 1943 proved to be the turning point in the Second World War. Too many setbacks and retreats had left Britain and her allies almost beyond hope, and the proposed invasion, the biggest amphibious operation ever planned, needed to be a success, perhaps more than any previous undertaking. Over the years, that first combined stab at Europe's underbelly had been overshadowed by other events and greater invasions, but none was more vital at the time. My story is fiction, but most of the background is based on what actually happened. A German submarine, U-570, was in fact captured by the British and used against her previous owners. The then unknown secret weapon, a radio-controlled bomb which could be launched and directed by an enemy aircraft, may seem to us almost antique in this age of nuclear weapons, but in 1943 it was a threat which almost tipped the balance against us. Had the Germans discovered our intention to invade Sicily instead of through Greece and the Balkans, it is almost certain that those deadly bombs would have broken the back of our sea forces before a landing could have been completed. As it was, several cloak-and-dagger ruses were successfully used. A dead body dressed as a marine officer was found on a Spanish beach with supposedly secret details of an Allied invasion through Greece. Other schemes were employed to make the enemy believe in this idea, so that when the attack began, his forces were wrongly deployed to repulse it. 2 months later, when the Allies struck at the Italian mainland and hit the beaches at Salerno, there were many who realized just how thin the margin of success had been. The Germans, then prepared and ready, brought those radio-controlled bombs into immediate use. Many men were lost, and fine ships put out of action. Among the latter were famous veterans of the Mediterranean campaign, including the battleship Warspite, the cruiser Uganda, and the American warships Philadelphia and Savannah. Chapter 1. A Good Catch. It was just 9 o'clock on a February morning when His Majesty's submarine Tristram edged against the greasy piles at Fort Blockhouse, Portsmouth, and her lines were taken by the waiting shore party. In the forepart of her conning tower, Lieutenant Commander Stephen Marshall watched the wires being dragged to the bollards along the pier, felt the steel plates beneath his boots vibrating uneasily, as if, like himself, his command was unable to accept that they had arrived safely. In the early morning, while they had idled outside the harbour until the tide was right to enter Hasler Creek by the submarine base, he had studied the land as it had grown out of the gloom, searching his thoughts for some sensation of achievement. Now, as he glanced briefly at the curious faces along the wall and below on the pier, he could sense little but anticlimax. Even his men looked different. It did not seem possible. For 14 months they had lived together in their own confined private world within this hull, from one end of the Mediterranean to the other, with each day bringing some fresh challenge or threat to their very existence. There had been a few new faces during that time, to replace the dead and wounded, but for the most part they were the same men who had assembled fore and aft on the Tristram's casing when she had slipped out of Portsmouth to join the war and seek out the enemy. "All secure aft, sir." Marshall turned slightly and glanced at his first lieutenant. Robert Gerard, tall and thin, with a slight stoop brought about by service in this and other boats. Even he seemed strangely alien in his reefer and best cap. For months they had seen each other in almost anything but regulation dress. Old flannel trousers and discarded cricket shirts, shorts and sandals in kinder days, dripping oilskins and heavy boots when the Mediterranean showed its other face, the one never seen on travel posters. "Thank you, Bob. Ring off main motors." He turned back to watch the busy working party on the pier. There were two wrens sheltering below the wall on their way to some office or other, their arms crammed with files and papers. One of them waved to him, and then they both scuttled out into the wind again and vanished. A party of new trainees was being mustered on the rampart above, a petty officer no doubt pointing out the finer points of a returning submarine. Few appeared to be paying much attention, and Marshall could guess their feelings at this moment in their service.